Just wanted a simpler life where I can grow food and surf and kind of just live. I started a YouTube channel and a blog about homesteading here in Hawaii.
Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name is Cormac Harkin and we've got Sean Jennings with us today. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Cormac. I'm happy to be here today.
Well, I don't know. You have a record. No, you're breaking records in this podcast. You've been on it now three times.
All right. I'm honored.
You're definitely out in the lead. So if anybody wants to check out an episode, you were on with Pina, and then with Jesse, and then with the last episode there, we had a round table discussion about education and permaculture, teaching, training, things like that. Sean, you want to just give us a quick introduction here, please?
Yeah, well, my name's Sean Jennings. I'm originally from California, but I live in Hawaii now. And I first got into permaculture, it was like 20 years ago. That's what brought me to Hawaii. I was kind of disillusioned with the rat race in Los Angeles and Southern California there, and just wanted a simpler life where I can grow food and surf and kind of just live, you know? And so I found some affordable land in Hawaii, and I moved out here. I built my own house. I made a little food forest, and I had my little off-grid paradise that I created for myself. But then, you know, being young, I was only 23. I still was kind of looking for adventure. So I left for a little while, and I went back to California, this time to Northern California, and fell into the permaculture scene out there. I went to the New College of California, where a lot of my teachers were these permaculture educators from the Sonoma County area. I had Richard Heinberg, Brock Dolman, Eric Olson, a lot of great people that I was able to learn from. And I eventually got my PDC. And because of what I learned from those guys, they kind of really encouraged me to go out and share permaculture with the world. And so I went back to my home for a little while in LA, and I started a homestead project out there in Malibu, where that's where I first got my hands in the dirt, and where I really learned how to install these systems on a real scale. I installed tons of water tanks and irrigation systems, and we had tons of trees that we planted, and veggie gardens, animals, bees, you name it. We did it all there. And while I was there, I started a community group in LA, because I remember one day sitting at this property. It was a real nice property up in the Santa Monica Mountains. It overlooks Los Angeles, and I see this giant city, and I'm like, oh man, we're doing all this great stuff up here in the hills, but what about all those people down there? What if like one day something breaks down and they all need food and water and things to eat and whatnot? And so I was like, well, let's go into the city and try and help people with what I've been learning with permaculture and the skills I've been learning. And let's get some real hands-on activities going. Let's get some positive projects happening in the city. So I started a group called Westside Permies. I remember my first time doing it, so nervous. I put up a few flyers around town, and I was like, oh man, is anyone going to show up? I had my mom come and help me, you know, get some snacks on the table. And I just wanted someone else to make sure someone was going to be there. And that first meeting, 30 people showed up. Everyone was really stoked. We had a follow-up meeting where we did like a hands-on project. I think we installed a gray water system after that initial meeting. And then we began to form up where we met monthly. And we had a monthly talk at a library where we brought in guest speakers. But we always like to follow up those guest speakers with hands-on projects. So another weekend, we took what we learned from these speakers and tried to apply it in our neighborhoods. And so that went on for a couple years. And I got to meet a lot of awesome people through those projects. And we did a pretty cool event for 2 years called Gardens of Gratitude, where over a single weekend, we installed gardens across Los Angeles with the help of over 800 volunteers. So the goal was to install 100 gardens in a single weekend. And we did that for 2 years in a row. And that was really fun. But, you know, I had a kid, and eventually my homestead in Hawaii was calling me back. Life in LA was, it was fun. It was, it's my home, but it's expensive out there. And I just wanted to come back for the simple life again. And so I found my way back here to Hawaii. And my wife and I raised our young daughter for a little while, and we enjoyed that. And I was working landscaping for a long time, installing systems for people here in Hawaii. And sometimes I'd fly back to California, but primarily out here in Hawaii. And then eventually, you know, I'm getting older. I got gray in the beard here, and, you know, the back isn't as young as it used to be. So I was like, got to find a way to get out of the physical labor and into something else. And so I started a YouTube channel and a blog about homesteading here in Hawaii. And I share a lot about what I learned through that. And I've been building up a sustainable income just through these this blog and YouTube channel, where I no longer have to work in the field and actually get lots of consultations now from them, which is a lot cooler. Now here I am. I took some of those skills from YouTube and the blog, and I'm applying them to the Permaculture Institute. I'm helping those folks try and build out their institution there and just kind of help spread the word of what they're doing. And then here I am today. That's my path to how I got here.
That's quite a journey. Let's go back to the start of it. You're going to get through it again now. So you actually had the homestead before you discovered permaculture.
Oh no. I remember I was in my room, in LA, and I was just on the computer. And I was just looking up stuff like, oh man, how do I start a garden, or where could I find some cheap land? And I'm a surfer, so I naturally gravitate towards places with waves. And I looked at Hawaii, and I was like, is there anything affordable in Hawaii? And to my surprise, I saw land for $3,000. And while I was searching, I also saw this Hawaii permaculture thing. And I didn't know what permaculture was, but I checked out their website and learned more about it. And that's what kind of got me down the rabbit hole of learning about permaculture, was through looking at land really in Hawaii. And I was like, oh, this is it, man. This is what I'm looking for. Like, I just want a simple life. I want to have a garden, rain tank, solar. I want to, create that life that permaculture kind of talked about. And my first step here when I got to Hawaii was I landed on a woofing farm, which is willing workers on organic farms. And I volunteered on a farm, and eventually then I got my own piece of land and developed my homestead from there. And I got to say, I never swung a hammer before. I didn't know anything about building. I remember I got my plans for my house online. It was just like three pieces of paper with like a layout of how to build a one room cabin. And I did it over 2 months. I built a cabin. It seemed to rain on me every day, but pushed through. I went, at night I would charge my batteries for my power tools at the local movie theater. We had a dollar movie theater nearby. So I'd go watch a movie, charge my tools. I was sleeping in my van, and eventually I built that home. After a couple months, I moved in, got power. It was a process. It's not for the faint of heart. It takes a lot of work to go off grid, especially if you're starting from scratch. But I was lucky. I was young. People do it when they're older. I've helped other people do it, and it's possible. But I was glad I was young and had the foresight, because something that I really value from that is later on in life, just the fact that I had a home that was paid for and then I could always go back to. Like, I remember moving back to California and rents were getting so high that it's getting so stressful that I was just like, it's time to go back. I got my home, I'm in my sanctuary. And that's kind of what permaculture, I feel like, helps design for people is this way to have this freedom from the rat race, a different way of living. Because I was taught to this mainstream way, go to college, get a job. But that life never appealed to me. I never wanted it. And so permaculture, when I learned about it, the fact that there's another way of living and designing your life, it made total sense to me. And so I felt like I intuitively started to design my life to live a life based upon permaculture principles. And if I could suggest anyone to do something to do that, like that's one of the most important things we can do is we talk a lot about designing our homesteads and our gardens and whatnot. But yesterday on the roundtable, we were talking to Sarah and she was talking about designing your life. And that's something I felt like I've always kind of done, but not really done it consciously. But imagine if you do it consciously, like the amount of power that you could have designing your life using permaculture principles. Like, I'm really glad I found it at an early age.
You're very, very lucky. I didn't find it until I was in my 40s. So that's the process I'm going through now, is trying to design my life around permaculture and trying to get working in permaculture. But it's not easy just making that transition. Like it's not a switch you flick. You might flick the switch in your head, but it's like an oil tanker. Like it's going to take a while to turn around.
Yeah, I can imagine like doing it later on in life too, once you're established, you know, and you have your thing, and then you kind of see how things are broken, and now you kind of got to start all over.
it's making that change without, everything's built on the foundations of your old, the life you're trying to leave behind. And then you have to bring everybody with you, wife, kids, house, dogs, chickens, exactly. All that. So just takes a while, but we're making progress, which was just good. And then part of the reason too, this podcast is to learn from others and then share that. So it's trying to find out people's stories and people share them and their experiences, and hopefully that inspires people. So you came, right, so you were on the land. Then you done the whiffing. We'll get back to LA in a minute and all the different projects. But when you came back to Hawaii the second time, you must, with all that experience, you must notice some difference
with my land.
Yeah, with your land, because you'd been practicing now for so many years. Was there anything that stood out?
Well, when I first left, I had my house. I had solar water catchment, gray water installed, and, just a few random trees that I planted. But when I came back, it was like this whole, reinvigoration. Like, I understood what I needed to do, really. I understood what a food forest was and the concept of time and space. And how to start garden beds, that I just snapped right to it and started building. We built the bones of our gardens in a year. I had a half acre property that, it had some coconut trees and a couple avocados, but it didn't really have everything all together, right? And so with what I learned in California, some of it, all those projects that I did, some of it applied where I had to figure out how to get the proper nitrogen fixing species to pave the way for my fruit trees. I really focused more on that, getting a higher percentage of those planted compared to my fruit trees. So I went like 10 to 1 on nitrogen fixing trees compared to my fruit trees that I planted, but the intention was always to chop them and keep them small, and maybe just let them get a little big enough to shade out my fruit trees from the hot tropical sun, because my lot was like really flat and sunny. And so I learned a lot about using the fruit trees or the nitrogen fixing trees as a strategy to protect my fruit trees. And it worked really well in the early days, because out here in the tropics, a lot of the big problem is fertility and organic matter. it rains so much that it just washes right through the soil. And so by having these nitrogen fixing trees on site, I had mulch, I had organic matter that could have just chopped and dropped on the ground. And that concept, I didn't quite understand as much before I went to California and kind of got my hands dirtier into more projects. And then, you know, understanding space and time, the fact that when I plant my trees, they're going to be small for a few years. And there's so much space that you can use in that time. So we had lots of vegetable gardens growing around the fruit trees, growing sweet potatoes or pineapples or kalo, you know, low growing, you know, typical annual vegetable crops that you might see in a garden, but the tropical version. And those held the space until the fruit trees got bigger. And now it's what, 15 years since I came back the second time, and the trees are all really big, and the lot of the understory crops, a lot of them have changed since then. Instead of having a lot of daikons and kalo, now I have sweet potato or pineapples on the fringe, things that could handle shade, or I have to replace them in order to be on the edge, the forest edge. So all those things were kind of, I learned through my projects in LA on how to maximize all our space and get all these plants growing and how to also propagate a lot of it. I would say I built my own personal garden. I don't like to spend money, so it probably cost me only a couple hundred bucks to get all my plants and all my soil, because I learned how to grow a lot of my own plants and grafting and air laying. I learned you know, permaculture is like a design science, but there's so many other things that we need to learn in order to be successful using permaculture. So I had to learn how to propagate plants. I had to learn how to build compost. I had to learn about different species of trees and nitrogen fixers and whatnot. There's so many other subjects for us to have to dive into in order for us to actually be proficient in gardening, homesteading, building, whatever it might be. Permaculture is just a framework to hold it all in and to design with, but all those skills were still needed. And so, yeah, I hope that, yeah, that gets to the point of what you're trying to ask me.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I would have thought you were more prepared the second time around, with all that experience, all them projects. So you went back to LA, then you did your PDC. Can you tell us about the PDC you did?
Yeah, so through the New College of California up there, that was in Sonoma County, Northern California. I met a lot of the permaculturists in that area, and I took a PDC through OAC while I was there, Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. Brock Dolman and Kendall Dunnigan were the teachers. I did take a few other PDCs around. I traveled through the East Coast for a while and took one with Andrew Foss, but I feel like my main, you know, kind of teaching happened there in California. And yeah, the New College was like a PDC in itself. And when I took the PDC, I was like, oh, I already learned all this stuff at the New College. Like, I didn't realize that's what I was learning, really. And the push there was to be an activist, I guess. And I didn't realize I was being trained to be an activist. It just kind of happened. I learned about this Mark Lakeman and the City Repair Project and what they're doing up there. I learned about Cobb building and how just building a natural home is sort of an activist, being an activist, you know? And just like how can we use permaculture? How can we use the concepts that we learn in permaculture to go back into our community? And I never really liked protesting. I don't like just get up there and hold a sign and say, you know, go home, or, you know, we need the government to do this. You know, no, the government's not going to do anything for us. We need to do it. And so that's what I liked about the New College, was it was like, don't wait for anyone else. Don't try and ask the government for permission. You are the only one who should take that permission and move forward with it. And so I went back to LA eventually. And like I said, I started that community group, and I just saw what needed to be done, really. And I saw the city government, you know, they're trying to get sustainable and do things, but, you know, it's all sort of
an illusion.
I don't know how to say it. It's an illusion, right? Like, they're not really, you know, it's all greenwashed, really.
It's all lip service. It's like, let's say we're being green. On this side of the public, but yeah, that's let's not actually practice green practices.
No, but I saw the value in working with government, and actually that was one of the things that worked out for me. Was I started this community group, and I worked out, I met someone that was like working for a liaison nonprofit for a sustainability organization and for the government, and she like kind of really, me and her meshed, and she liked my community group idea with permaculture, and she was able to help kind of open the doors for what we were doing with some of the governmental people. Like, but we weren't asking them permission. We were showing them what needed to be done, and we were able to get them to see what we were doing and be like, okay, maybe we should do more stuff like what these guys are doing. So like, we got them to get more rain tank incentives for people in Santa Monica, and just to get more behind more community garden projects around the city. And yeah, so that was a great experience. One thing I really learned through starting a community group, and this is something I really feel like it's valuable for young permaculturists, people who are really idealistic about changing the world, but also creating a career in something they love doing, is start by creating a community group. Do that work for free, and you'll have so much abundance coming back to you. Like, I remember everyone offering me all these projects just because I started this community group, and I could just feel this abundance flowing towards me. And, you know, I always thought if I ever needed that again, like, I could just start a community group and be able to build my career that way, because so many doors open when I started that group. I met so many people, I made a lot of connections, and it, even though I didn't feel like it, I was just some guy who just wanted to hold space for everyone else, for all the other experts to come and share with us. Somehow through that process, I became an expert, and people sought out my work for helping them on their projects. And yeah, because I also remember a lot of people who were part of the group asking about how they could find work and how they could get into this. And I found it kind of funny, because I was like, oh man, what are you talking about? Everyone's asking, everyone all around us has work for us to do. Like, why is it so hard for you? And I think it's just because it was, you know, people see a lack instead of an abundance. They see a competitor instead of a teammate. And like, when we start to work within the community, we begin to see what the community can do and how we could all work together and tap into that abundance. And so for me, the most powerful thing, besides just making all these projects, you know, around the city that I feel pretty proud of, and we left kind of a lot of positive stuff around LA when we moved, just the power in myself, like, that I gained in leading a community group, the confidence that I gained, and the realization on how to make things flow. I thought that was the most powerful lesson I learned. And I hope other people kind of take that to heart, because it really was just a simple act of just putting up some flyers around town and taking a chance. And it became, you know, it became pretty cool in the long run. And it's something I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. If you think of all them, particularly younger people who go and protest and end up getting arrested and gluing themselves to things, if they just took that energy, put it into the community in their gardens and building the communities up, use that energy properly, I think your example there's a perfect, it's a good story for them, an example that put your energy into something productive, not destructive, because your protest goes on deaf ears anyway.
Yeah, I've been to a lot of protests. Well, like for the Iraq War, I remember that was the last protest I ever went to, and I remember millions of people on the street, and George Bush says, "Oh, they're entitled to their opinion. I just don't agree with them."
Yes, you know? same thing here. There was, I think there was like 2 million people marched in London against the Iraq War, against Tony Blair, and he was like, "Ah, we're going anyway."
Yeah, and so it's like that made me realize it's like. You can't, you know, protest to have these people change. If we want change, you know, the people have to lead the change, and then hopefully the leaders will follow. Yeah, that's how the quote goes.
Yeah, I think that's great. Lost. That's my first edit. Right. So you're back in Hawaii now. I seen on your channel that you just moved as well.
Yeah, just a few months ago, I moved to a larger site closer to town. So, when I moved back to Hawaii, I moved back to my property that I originally built. But it was like 20 miles outside of town. It's a drive. It's far away from everything, from the kids, and to be able to see their friends and get to activities and things. And amazingly, some 3-acre spot opened up just on the fringe of Hilo, which is the big town around here. And so we jumped on it, and I'm kind of starting all over again here. I still have access to my old property, but now I get to do the project all over again. And I was just starting to enjoy the fact that I was at the climax stage of a project, you know? When you're at the climax stage, all you got to do is harvest and do a little pruning, maybe some mulching and composting now and then, but it's easy that stage. Starting up from scratch again, oh man, you got to build all the chicken coops, all the infrastructure, plant all the trees, and around here all we have is rock. We don't have soil because we're on a pretty active volcano, and so it's all hard, back-breaking work. But my kids are older, so I get to have them help me.
How does permaculture come into that, living near an active volcano? Is there any?
How do we use permaculture here?
Yeah, or is it just when the lava comes, it just comes, and that's it. You're running. There's nothing.
Well, yeah. If you're in the path of the lava, there's nothing you can do. You just have to accept that Pele is coming to get you. But you know. Out here, we have different, we have to employ different strategies for employing like permaculture design. You know, in most places, people are focused on harvesting water first, for instance, which we do plenty of. We have pretty much everyone around where I live harvests their primary water sources from a rain tank. I find it funny in other communities, like back where I was in California, harvesting water in a rain tank is this really cool, novel idea. Everyone's like, you know, so stoked to do it. It's like a badge of honor if you have a rain tank. Whereas here, it's just a necessity. We don't have pipes running through the rock to get to our homes. We have to catch it from the rain, but luckily it rains often. But we also can't dig swales or harvest that water in the earth because it's all rock. And so instead the main thing is building organic matter, trying to hold the moisture in the soil through organic matter. But the rain breaks it all down so quickly. And because we have the rock, it's real porous, but it rains so much that water is really not an issue for our plants here, but fertility is. And that just helps with increasing the water absorption of our property by increasing organic matter and fertility. So that's kind of how we work with our water systems here. And then everything else pretty much is the same. It's like you're planting nitrogen fixing trees, you're planting fruit trees, you're planting shrubs, vines, root crops, you know, all this stuff is the same. It's just how we manage it, how we grow it. The tropics, you know, we have our challenges with pests. We have our challenges with fertility. Other people in other climates have challenges with water or or poor soil or other issues. It's whatever location we have where we have our challenges, but the design concepts of permaculture are the same. Putting your more intensive vegetable garden close to the house so you actually take care of it. Locating your less intensive fruit trees a little further away. Keeping a native forest area, you know, where preferably, you know, far away from the home where you just let it be and don't touch it. And, you know, all those, and then using the principles of trying to reuse and observe and all that, you know, all that stays the same no matter where you go. It's just the variety of plant, really, and the method, you know, the methods you have to use to create your garden or to harvest your rainwater or, you know, all that stuff. It's just a slightly different techniques based on location.
Yeah, we have no shortage of water here, but we do go sometimes 5 or 6 weeks without it. Which becomes a challenge then because it rains all the time, nobody's really prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I as you say, it's different problems, but the methods of solving the problems are the same. Yeah. So you mentioned, so what inspired you to start your blog?
Well, it was a trip to Indonesia.
Right.
My family and I in 2019, my wife's a teacher. So every summer we kind of try and get off the rock, we call it here in Hawaii, and try and explore. And for a long time, we were just going back to the mainland, to California or to other areas to visit family and whatnot. But 2019 was our first big international trip, which was really fun. It's something that myself and my family, we all still talk about and remember. And I was like, man, okay, I want to figure out how I can create an online income, so perhaps maybe I could travel more or maybe even one day move to another country. and so that's kind of what spurred it on. And I just figured I'd focus on what I've been doing my whole life, which was permaculture and homesteading. And, you know, it was learning a new skill. I've been into computers and the internet since it started, but I never knew how to make money off of the internet and whatnot. So I started doing researching, watching YouTube. I found a couple guys that seemed trustworthy and had a lot of good reviews on helping set up a blog. And so I went down that route. I started for a year building out my blog, writing a lot of blog posts, building up the content. And I got ads and affiliates built into it. And I've turned it into something that makes me, you know, about $700 a month passively from the blog. I just do about 5 articles a month to be able to keep it up. The real money, though, from what I'm learning is info products. And I've gone on to Hawaii, you know, doesn't have much written material about the garden, about where things grow or what grows well and whatnot. So I focused on an ebook, a month to month in the Hawaiian garden, where I try to fill in that void of information, what to do every month, what varieties grow well, what microclimates, because Hawaii has almost every microclimate in the world, so we can grow almost anything here. So what microclimates do these things grow well in? And that book has actually been one of my, you know, best money makers, I guess. It's just through the blog, you know, plugging it through the blog, I make a couple, like probably $1,000 or $2,000 a month off the ebook, and that's been pretty nice. And then a couple years ago, I started a YouTube channel to kind of complement the blog. And I was always that shy guy in school, you know, like I'd stay home from school when there was an oral report. My face would get beet red if I had to talk in front of the class. And I never imagined I'd ever start a community group or a YouTube channel and putting myself out there, talking to people. But I did. And sometimes you just got to do things that put you out of your comfort zone. And the other day, my YouTube channel just crested over 30,000 subscribers, and I get a couple hundred thousand views every month. I've had a couple million views total, and I make, you know, a little over 1,000, 2,000 from YouTube royalties, just from YouTube royalties. And then I also get offered a lot, like by companies to plug their products. Like I've had knives, people give me knives or gardening tools, or I've had water filters, and I'm trying to get the biogas digester so that I can have that and show it off to people. I'm talking to them right now. So once in a while, you also get these side benefits from YouTube, not just the money. And in addition, YouTube has been, the blog is like this great passive income, but nobody knows who I am through the blog. But YouTube has like been something that really has blown up the brand, shall I say. Like, that's where I'm known. In fact, like, it's kind of weird. I go around Hawaii and people recognize me from my YouTube channel all the time. Hey, Sean. Hey, I watch you on YouTube. It's cool. It's fun, but it's also a little weird being kind of recognized like that. But it just shows the power of YouTube and how it could build a brand. And people contact me a lot for consulting on their homestead projects. And I've been starting to build out that side of things, because consulting has become turned into a pretty profitable thing. And through it all, like, I've also kind of just thought about what else I can do with this. Just by starting something, other things kind of come out of it. So I started a seed company selling tropical fruit tree seeds, and that I plugged through my blog and my YouTube channel. And I sell these seeds mainly through Etsy, and it's provided me, that's another $1,000 a month income generator. And so, like, all these little endeavors, I'm able to generate a pretty good, you know, monthly income. Some of them are less intensive in regards to the work required to make them happen. But all of them are fun, and I enjoy them, and I get to do what I like doing. And I feel like I'm providing a good service to the world by doing them. Since I moved here to my new place, I just want to mention that I was able to rent out my old homestead. And my old homestead, you know, it's not in the best location here in Hawaii. It's, you know, like I said, it's a little farther out and whatnot. But because it's got such a established garden, and it just looks, it's, if you walk through it, it's a half acre lot, but you feel like you're on something so much bigger, and it just feels nice to be there. We had no problem finding awesome tenants. And I feel like that's another side benefit to creating a project like this. It's like, if you do end up renting it out, or, you know, maybe need to sell, it's another selling point to people, like, where you can get higher quality tenants or a higher, value on your property, just because of creating these sustainable systems that people know they want, but they don't necessarily know it till they get there. And they're like, yes, this feels good.
And they can give you a call from Hawaii and they want to do it quick.
Yeah.
Avoid the type one errors.
That's the goal. It's like, I've made a lot of type one errors in my life. So through consultations, I just tell people, you know, like, I'll help you save money by not making the same mistakes I made, because shoots, I've made plenty of costly ones. That's for sure.
No, I think that's great. The multiple sources of income there. I think there are at least 6 or 7, probably more. And I guess that is a good, it's a permaculture thing, isn't it, as well? You're not relying on one thing. You're sort of spreading the risk. Diversity, is that what it is? So any advice for someone who's trying to, right, so as a young professional, get out and do the community work, just get going, get started, just start building stuff. And then as well, build up your knowledge, and then you all these opportunities come to you, whether that's blogging, YouTube. I think it's a great example of sort of a good career path that you could take any of these and run with them as well.
Yeah, I think you just have to not be afraid to just trying something new. I know I'm blessed by having you know, the time available because of what I did way back when I was younger. I don't have a mortgage now. I don't even pay rent on this new place that we're at because the old house rental money pays for this new house. So it's like I have the time, but if you don't have the time, there was also a time in my life when I didn't have the time, when I was living in California paying rent and struggling to keep up with the rat race. And even then, like, I was working as a landscaper. I wasn't making much money working for someone else, about, you know, $17 an hour. I'm not making ends meet. I'm like, I need to get my own clients. I need to start getting paid. So I just went out there and just started, you know, doing it. You know, I started talking to people that I met through my landscape job. I got some side projects. I started posting things on Facebook. And even back then when I was really busy, I remember coming home late and just writing a blog post. Because I started a blog a while back just for my landscape company to try and help promote that. And sometimes you got to hustle and you got to do it. And other times it's a lot easier when you're in a space like I'm at now, where you don't have to hustle and you have the time. But, you know, if you're young, you have the energy, and that's when you should be hustling and making it happen. And you don't have all the other distractions of family and life. And so I would say that the main thing is find out what you want to do, learn how to make it a business, because the skill of what you want to do is easy. Being a farmer, being a knife maker, whatever that might be, the skill of making that product, growing the food, making the knives, that's the easy part. Turning it into a business, that's the hard part. How do you get the customers? How do you make the sales? I would say learn about YouTube. I've seen the value of YouTube for what it could do to promote a business. And nowadays, that'll make anything a lot easier. If you want to get into community projects or starting your own business, YouTube can kickstart that for you. You can just start by videoing projects in your backyard. And if you wanted to turn a business, ask for people if they want you to do it for them. Or if you wanted to start a community group, let people know that you're going to do this at someone else's place and you want everyone to come. You know, YouTube could be that for you. Back in the day, I had to go and put flyers on telephone poles all around town and kind of just hope people were walking by and saw them. But yeah, so now with the internet, it's a little easier. And, but the main thing is you really have to not be afraid to just do it. Just go out there and try and focus on something for a while, because there's a lot of failures in the early days. I want to give up on things all the time. And I've given up on plenty. I've failed with plenty of things. But you don't do yourself any service if you quit too quickly, you know? And if you fail in something, no matter what, you built skills. And you're going to be able to take those skills and use them on the next thing that you try and do. And I feel like that's I already had a background in making websites for my blog or just for fun in the past. And even though, like, I've made things that failed, it was a lot easier for me when I wanted to try and do it again with a different focus. So all of life is a learning lesson where We're gathering new skills and knowledge with everything that we do through successes and failures. Just, you know, keep pushing and be determined to make it happen. And so with permaculture, I see lots of places that people can make a living through permaculture. I feel like I've done it. I, for a while, solely installed rain tanks for people. I was a rain tank installer. This is all through my landscape business. Eventually, I morphed into installing gray water systems, laundry to landscape, and shower to flower, as we call it, where we brought the water from the house into the landscape. And I focused on that for a while. And I also installed lots of just whole systems for people. I've started the blog and a YouTube channel with a permaculture lens. People can do so much, you know, nurseries, growing, selling seeds, consultations, building gardens, making raised beds for people, whatever it is that you love to do. It doesn't even have to be garden related. But permaculture can fit into community planning. It could fit into a lot of avenues. It's just focus on what your passion is. And, you know, if you have a passion, don't give up till you reach your dream, man. Like, I don't know. I was just never one to work for somebody else myself. And so I don't know how I did it. I just have, you got to have faith at the same time, because somehow I'm still here and kicking. I don't feel like I've made a lot of money in my life. I've gone from making good money to making no money to good money to no money. So I feel like I break even, but I'm still here, and the world just keeps providing, you know? And so you got to have faith sometimes that all will be well as well. That's a lot of it is mental.
You're definitely, thanks very much. You've definitely shown us today. We take a lot of value away from that, from you sharing, and thank you. And if you thought you got value from that, give us a thumbs up as well down there. Sean, thank you very much. It's been great as always. And you're definitely in the lead now of the podcast appearances for us.
Well, thanks for letting me ramble on so much here.
No, it's great. I love it. I think today we got all the avenues and multiple income streams is very important, I think, to try and build up. Something I'm juggling with at the minute, but I'll get there. Sean, thanks very much. Guys, that's been Sean Jennings. You can find him over at Homestead in Hawaii. We'll put all these links in the description. Thanks very much, Sean.
All right, Cormac. Thanks for having me. And thanks, everyone out there.